From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, we've got a great show ahead for you today. We just had a feast day that passed us by that relates to St. André Bessette, the great miracle worker of Canada, and Father Michael Delaney, the rector of St. Joseph's Oratory of Mount Royal, which is the largest shrine in the world dedicated to St. Joseph. We'll be excited to talk to him later in the show about that great wonder-working saint. And we'll be looking at Bishop Frederick Barriga. His death anniversary is just ahead, and he's one of my favorite might-be saints. We did a program on his life a few years ago, and in my new book, They Might Be Saints on the Path to Sainthood in America, I have a chapter, one of the 24 dedicated to blesseds and venerables from the United States, about this future American saint, and I believe that there's a miracle that's being considered on the diocesan level, which could bump him from venerable to blessed. So we'll be talking today with Lenora McKean from the Bishop Barriga Association about the incredible life of Bishop Barriga. And later in the show, as we always do, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project for January 15th, Our Lady of the Poor from Bonneau in Belgium. I've been to that site myself a couple years ago, and it's a beautiful site of a Marian apparition. And this is one of the most highly approved modern cases in the history of the Catholic Church. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. And we'll look at the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Nicolas Gross from Germany, a martyr. We'll be talking about his incredible life as well. And the question of the week, will Sister Maria Kaleda, who risked her life to boost the faith in Albania, be named a saint? We'll see if I have any insights on that. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And people who are interested in finding out the latest and greatest reports, you can connect to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. And there we post the news stories that are coming out and those things that relate to miracles there as well. And this was kind of an interesting story, and maybe it's a miracle, maybe it's not, but on different news outlets, Catholic news outlets, they were reporting that a mother said that an impromptu encounter with of her son with Pope Francis led to a quote-unquote miracle. And so it was one of these big moment, viral Vatican moments of 2021. There was a young boy in a black tracksuit wearing glasses and a face mask, and he spontaneously walked up to greet the Pope in the middle of a general audience for Pope Francis. But there was more to this encounter than meets the eye. So this 10-year-old, he suffered from epilepsy and autism, and his health had been recently declining so badly that doctors thought he might have a brain tumor. And Paolo Bonavita is his name. He was that day in Rome for medical tests, and his mother, Elsa, told a Catholic news agency that the papal audience was followed by inexplicable improvement in her son's condition. She says, "It's a miracle for us, a miracle for my family, and the Lord was with him that day." So at the start of the live stream audience on October 20th, Bonavita unexpectedly walked up the steps toward the Pope in Paul VI Hall, and he didn't have the strength to go up, but in fact, Paulo goes down the stairs, he needs a support, a handrail, but on that day, he was able just to go up alone, his mother said, and he stumbled a little two or three times, but immediately, he had the instinct to get up again, and the Lord was with him that day close by, and the Lord gave him his hand, I'm convinced of it, end quote. So when he approached the Pope smiled and had a few comments for him. And Monsignor Leonardo Sapienza, the regent of the papal household, said he gave his blessing to Bonavita, and pilgrims applauded, and Paolo joined him, enthusiastically clapping his hands. And the boy sat briefly on his hands before standing in front of the Pope again, bouncing on his toes. And Pope Francis's zucchetto caught his attention, and he pointed it out to Sapienza, who is now seated behind the pontiff. And I've got another story for you this week. It's not quite a miracle, but I don't know, it's some sort of a miracle of architecture, you might say. People know about this statue of Cristo Redemptor that famous Brazilian statue of Jesus in Brazil, and it is the largest statue of Jesus in the world. And would you believe that there is going to be a new statue that's even larger than that famed wonder of the world, as some people call it, the Cristo Redemptor? And if you had to guess what country is building this statue, well, the Brazilians are at it again. So a statue of Christ is being built in Brazil that will be larger than the iconic Cristo Redemptor, Christ the Redeemer statue of Rio de Janeiro. And this image, which has been under construction since 2019, will be called Cristo Protector, Christ the Protector, and is being erected on the Cerro de las Antenas, a hill near Encantado in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. And so the project was planned to be completed by the end of 2021, but the state government extended the deadline until the end of January 2022. Maybe that's COVID-related, I don't know. But Cristo Protector, Christ the Protector, will be 140 feet tall, 16 feet taller than Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. So maybe that's not a miracle story, but pretty remarkable that Brazil will have the two largest statues of Jesus in the entire world. And that's all the miracle news for this week. And if you want more information on the miracles happening all around the world, you can connect to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. I like to post miracle stories, things that relate to miracles, and just interesting things like giant statues being built. You'll find all that and some scientific discoveries and things of this nature as well. You'll find all that stuff on The Miracle Hunter show page on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter as well. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. People who know me, my friends, know I love pub trivia in a non-coronavirus year. You might find me out in a bar on occasion playing pub trivia. But we've got Catholic Pub Trivia for you here today. And last week we talked about Our Lady of Prompt Succor, that miraculous canonically crowned statue in New Orleans. And we did a program of Explore with the Miracle Hunter on EWTN television about that. And if you're interested in that great interview, you can check out the audio archives for that program. And so the question on last week's show, there have only been two other Marian statues in history that have been recognized by Rome. What Florida statue was canonically crowned in 2021? And that, of course, was Our Lady of La Leche. And that crowning was aired here on EWTN as well. Well, it turns out all the people from Florida knew the answer to that one. So we got tons of responses of Our Lady of La Leche. Lots of right answers on this one. So thanks to everybody who wrote in. And this week, we're talking, for this week's question, we're talking about St. André Bessette, a Canadian saint canonized in 2010. But this week's question is, who was the most recent Canadian to be canonized? So St. André Bessette is a very modern canonization in the year 2010, just over a decade ago. But who was the most recent Canadian to be canonized? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email and we'll see if you have the correct answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about the greatest wonder-working saint in Canada's history, and that is St. André Bessette. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk about some of these great wonder workers throughout Catholic history. Padre Pio comes to mind, of course, and maybe Solanus Casey in the United States. But if you had to pick somebody from our neighbors up north in Canada, we'd all point to St. André Bessette, Brother André, as he was known while he was alive. And incredible miracles were worked through his prayers. He always, or it seemed anyways, he prayed to St. Joseph, through St. Joseph's intercession, that those miracles might be worked. But he's a remarkable saint in that way, and I encourage people to find out more about him. His feast day just passed us last week, so it's still a perfect time to talk about this great wonder-working saint, St. André Bessette. And we're grateful to be joined by the rector of St. Joseph's Oratory of Mount Royal in Canada, and that is Father Michael Delaney. Welcome to the program today, Father Michael.
thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Now, he's a fascinating saint, and maybe most Americans still are getting to know the name, Saint André Bassett. So let's just sort of paint the picture. Who was the man, Brother André? Tell us a little bit the things we need to know about his life.
Brother André, his name was Alfred Bassett, a young man from a family, born into a family maybe 25, 30 miles outside of Montreal in the country. And he was the youngest of nine children. But he was orphaned at a very young age. Both his parents died. His mother died of illness. His father died of a logging accident. And he never really finished his formal education, but he was very, very devoted in his prayer and hard work. And throughout his life, in his young life, he was known for his kind of his inner spiritual life, even though they might not have used that language at the time. So he was on his own, and he did work in the United States for a while in a factory in Massachusetts, came back later, and at that time, he worked on a farm near where his home was in Saint-Grégoire in Quebec. And through that, he met a priest who recognized that he had something very special in him, but realized that he did not have the educational requirements be able to study for the priesthood, but he eventually introduced him to the Brothers of Holy Cross. Now our community, the Congregation of Holy Cross, we have priests, brothers, and sisters, and all the ones in Canada were located in and around Montreal at the time. And he took him to the Brothers, and eventually, through different meetings and his interest in joining the community, he was accepted for the novitiate and was given a job after his novitiate at the school right here in Montreal, which faces the oratory today, Collège Notre-Dame, named after the Blessed Mother. And at the school, he was the doorkeeper. He did the errand. He did laundry for the school. He did many, many different tasks. He probably kept the boiler going during the winter like we're experiencing now. And he became a beloved figure at the school. As the doorkeeper of the school, and that's what he was known for, he came to know all the students, their families, and many people started trusting in him. And from then, the healing ministries became as they shared with him, and he would pray with them and bless them, and they began to trust more and more in him. And that's when...
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. He's renowned as a miracle worker or wonder worker, or brought people to St. Joseph for St. Joseph's intercession, as the credit might be given there by Brother André himself. But was it him stationed at the door there that he had the ability to be introduced with all these people and hear of their problems? I think in the United States, we have a figure like that, Blessed Solanus Casey from Detroit. He was the doorkeeper.
Exactly.
And so people would come to him and talk to them about their problems. And he oftentimes there were miracles that were discussed.
Exactly. And there's a very strong parallel, as you just mentioned, with Brother Solanus. And as far as their own histories, yes, that's how we get to know these people so well. And they became to trust him. They found in him a very holy person. And he was always dedicated to St. Joseph. And for one, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, as the patron saint of Canada, St. Joseph always had a very important part in the life of all the churches. So in his own faith life, he was always very aware of prayers to St. Joseph and dedication. But I think also, as we've come to discover, as he was an orphaned boy, with a very strong faith, he probably looked at St. Joseph as the spiritual father of Jesus and probably connected with him in a way that, while they might not describe it at the time, was a very strong personal connection he had and dedication to St. Joseph. And at the school, in the chapel, they had this St. Joseph oil that he would take and he would use as a small part of the blessing that he would give people that came to ask for their prayers. And through this and through their trust in him and his prayer with them, they came to return and bring to them their needs and prayers for healing. And that's how his healing ministry really took off, and he knew generations of people. He became known across this whole area around Montreal and was brought to people who were sick as well. Interestingly, my family, we're all from upstate New York near Syracuse, and I had two great uncles, one wounded in World War I and the other who was born with polio, who came frequently to receive Brother André's blessing when they were young men, and they even attended the funeral services that were in 1937, where more than a million people came during January of 37 to pay their respects. So he's somebody that I've known of my whole life through the stories through my family. But people came to trust in him and confide in him and found that his presence really was a miracle for them and his blessing.
Amazing. We're talking today with Father Michael Delaney, the rector of the St. Joseph's Oratory of Mount Royal. And we're talking today about St. André Bassett. If you would, share a story or two of some of the miracle stories that are retold that relate to St. André. And of course, after his death, there have still been miracles that led to his canonization. But even in life, people sought out his blessing and his prayers. Talk about some of the remarkable circumstances that people found themselves in.
I think that one of the most remarkable is, if you look at it collectively, the small chapel that was originally built that was across the street from the school, and then it eventually evolved into what is today the oratory. So the small chapel of St. Joseph, when we still have that today, it's been moved up onto the hill behind the oratory, but people are able to see it. You will see it filled with testimonies of people's healing. And one thing that is recognizable are the number of crutches that are left, that people would come and they would leave as a memory and an act of thanksgiving for the healing that they would have experienced from him. It's overwhelming to see that, and we also have that in our votive chapel near where he is buried here in the oratory. Just the witnesses and the written testimonies that people have given for healing of their limbs, healing of their health, and it truly is, when you see it visually, you just stop and you marvel at what was possible through this miracle worker of Montreal, as they call him, as he had an impact on so many people, and then they gave their testimonies in giving thanks to him that then, you know, we have throughout time.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Father Michael Delaney, the rector of St. Joseph's Oratory of Mount Royal. And when we talk about the origins of the oratory, why was it built in the first place, and what role did Brother André have in that?
His desire was to have a shrine and a prayer, a place to come to prayer for St. Joseph. That was his great dedication in his life. And he started a very small chapel, we would say, which was right in front of the school, because so many people came to see him at the school that they finally decided he needed to have a different place to meet people when he was no longer going to be working as the doorkeeper at the school. So it started in a small little train depot, which is still on the street today, which was probably for the streetcar where people would wait inside. And then they built a small chapel where he would receive people. And people kept coming, and the numbers continued to increase in his fame, in a sense of what he did, but also the way he was with people. He cared for people. He saw the good in each person, and he prayed with them for their healing. He listened to them, and as you know, when people have needs, they come. It's similar to what we hope happens today. They come with their worries and their concerns and their real needs, and we hope that they leave feeling more peaceful, with hope and with healing in their hearts and healing in their bodies and souls. And that's what happened. And the chapel continued to grow, and so much that they decided that they wanted to continue to make it bigger. So they started, while he was still alive, they started with the crypt church. And by just over 100 years ago, it was functioning the crypt level of the oratory today, which is a very large church and beautiful inside. And what's beautiful about it, the same sanctuary area exists today as was in his time. It makes you realize that this is where he prayed, and when those came to him, prayed as well. And it continued to grow. And it was after his death that the rest of the basilica was built, and that was built in by the early 1950s. He died in 1937. But it just continued to grow with his dedication and this response to prayers to St. Joseph. So it's become the largest shrine in the world dedicated to St. Joseph, and maybe one of the most known. But it has really been through his inspiration and dedication that it started as a small place for prayer and blessing. yet it's grown into this beautiful sanctuary today.
Amazing. We've been talking today with Father Michael Delaney about the St. Joseph Oratory and St. Andre Bassett. And I know that things are closed down there due to COVID restrictions and protocols at this point, but hopefully that'll open back up in the future, the summer or otherwise, for people to come visit. If people want to find out more about St. Joseph's Oratory, what's the best website or place they can do that?
Well, our website is www.saint-joseph.org. And they could also Google St. Joseph's Oratory. You'll find everything in English and in French. And if they use Facebook, they could search for St. Joseph's Oratory, or they could search for Brother Andre. We have a special page as well that folds into the Oratory page for Brother Andre Bassett. And they could find us in any of those ways. The main phone number is area code 514-733-8211. We would encourage anyone, if it's possible, when they can travel, to take the time and to come to see the beautiful building, the prayer space, learn more of the history of Brother Andre and feel his presence, visit his tomb, visit our St. Joseph Votive Chapel, which is a beautiful area for prayer. And we also have beautiful grounds. We have a Way of the Cross. We have the grounds up, the gardens that run up along the mountainside, and the views from our shrine overlooking the city are well-renowned, and still in the middle of winter, people come each day to watch the sunsets because they're so beautiful. So we want to encourage anybody to come. People of all faiths come here. There are a number of masses each day. The Sacrament of Reconciliation is offered each day, as well as the blessings area, consultation and counseling office. So there's a number of pastoral services available as well each day.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Michael Delaney, the rector of St. Joseph's Oratory, for joining us on today's program, talking to us about St. Andre Bassett and that beautiful shrine there in Canada. Thank you so much for being with us on today's program.
Thank you, and I wish all of you many blessings in this new year, and to all your listeners. God bless.
God bless. That was Father Michael Delaney. Check that out, St. Joseph's Oratory. You can Google that or saint-joseph.org to find out more about this incredible, largest shrine in the entire world dedicated to St. Joseph. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be trying to answer the question of the week about Sister Kaleda, whether she is going to be named a saint. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions, whether it's giving a talk. I travel around the United States and give talks at parishes and conferences, and usually we dedicate a good 15 minutes or half an hour at the end to answering questions that people have about miracles. But people also write in with their miracle questions to, they go to the website miraclehunter.com, and then they send me a note that way. And so the question for this week was, will Sister Maria Coletta, who risked her life to spread the faith in Albania, be named a saint? And that comes to us from Brian. And so it's a great question. She just passed away this past week. God rest her soul. And the question is, will she be a saint? And of course, I am neither the Pope nor a member of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, so I can't actually say for sure, but my guess is probably. She's an Albanian nun who inspired Pope Francis after her courageous faith under communist persecution, who died at the age of 92. And Sister Maria Coletta, she risked her life by bringing communion to the sick and dying under the regime of the dictator Enver Hoxha, whose communist government destroyed churches and martyred Catholics in an effort to create an atheist state. And the nun died on January 2nd in her convent in northern Albania. And Albania is a country of 2.8 million people, bordered by Montenegro, Kosovo, North Macedonia, and Greece. end. In a meeting with Pope Francis in Albania in 2014, this Stigmatine sister, she shared with the Pope the story of how she baptized babies in secret during this time of persecution. And Pope Francis was so moved by her story that he mentioned, in a homily 4 years later, a beautiful example of the Church as a mother. So that is Sister Maria Caleta. And, of course, she just passed away this past week, and it normally takes some years for canonization causes to get off the ground. But perhaps this is one of these cases of papal prerogative, where a pope could canonize the saint even without all the need for miracles, but they probably will go through the process at least of validating her life of heroic virtue. And certainly her life was heroic and virtuous. So I think that she probably is a slam dunk of a saint. So thanks so much, Brian, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send me a message that way. And maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We'd like to do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day as it relates to that day's date. So we all know Fatima on May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion somewhere in the world that lines up to each and every day of the calendar year. And so for this date of January 15th, we've got Our Lady of the Poor from Banneau in Belgium in 1933. And this is one of the most highly approved Marian apparitions of the 20th century. There's probably about 10 of them since Our Lady of Guadalupe in 1531 that have received this level of recognition from the local bishop and Rome. So the story goes that in a garden behind the Becco family's cottage, the Blessed Mother is said to have appeared to Mary at Becco, age 11, on 8 different occasions. She called herself the Virgin of the Poor, and Mary promised to intercede for the poor, the sick, and suffering. And in her final apparition, she declared, "I am the Mother of the Savior, the Mother of God. Pray very much." Then she imposed her hands on Mariette's head and blessed her with the sign of the cross. She said, "Adieu until we meet again in God." And after 14 years of investigation, these apparitions were officially approved by the Catholic Church in 1949. And in a show of recognition, in 1985, Pope John Paul II went to Banneau and had an audience with Mariette at the sacristy there. So that is Our Lady of the Poor from Banneau and Belgium in the year 1933. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the page 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, 365 Days with Mary, or you can download the app, Marian Calendar, 365 Days with Mary, from the iOS App Store. Let's take a look at the They Might Be Saints segment of the show. This lines up to my television program, They Might Be Saints, on EWTN, which airs on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And also my book, They Might Be Saints, that it just came out in recent months, and that is a book of 24 American blesseds and venerables, all the people on the path to sainthood in America. So you can get that one from EWTNRC.com. That's the religious catalog for EWTN. But we highlight those future saints, and we do that on this show as well. For every day of the calendar year, there's someone, whether it's a miracle worker or a martyr or an ordinary person living an extraordinary life of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And so for today's date, for the memorial on January 15th, we have Blessed Nicolas Gross. And he was born on September 30th in 1898 in Niederwinningen in Germany. And he was a miner and a father of seven. And he was a member of the Christian Miners Labor Union at the age of 19 and its secretary at the age of 22. And he was a member of the Zentrum Christian Party at the age of 20. And he worked on Westdeutschen in West Germany, the workers' newspaper. And that was the Catholic workers' movement. And at age 22, he became the director at age 24. So nonviolent opposition of Nazism from its beginnings marked his writing career. And he worked with distinguished Catholic intellectuals who opposed the regime. And from Cologne in Germany, he exposed the lies and harmful effects of Nazi propaganda, and he worked for the revolt of the consciences against Hitler. And he was declared an enemy of the state. His newspaper was shut down in 1938, and at great risk, he continued to publish an underground edition of this newspaper. Nicholas tried to organize resistance among Catholic workers in preparation for the planned assassination of Hitler on July 20th in 1944. Though neither he nor the members of the group were implicated in the assassination attempt, Nicholas was arrested on August 12, 1944 for treason. He died by execution on January 15th in 1945 in Berlin prison, and he was cremated and his ashes were scattered. He was venerated by John Paul II in 2001, and in 2001 he was declared blessed by St. John Paul II as a martyr. And that is the Might Be Saint of the Day for today, January 15th, Blessed Nicholas Gross from Germany. For more information on any of these Might Be Saints, you can connect to the website, theymightbesaints.com. Also, check out my show on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, or pick up the book, They Might Be Saints, available at EWTN Religious Catalog. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berger Association, talking about that incredible future saint, Bishop Frederick Berger. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. When I talk about these future saints, these people who might be saints, we do television shows on EWTN on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. We've done 15 episodes already. Some of them still need to be aired, but 15 have been filmed so far. So it's been an exciting project, but one of my absolute favorites that I was able to do was on Bishop Frederick Berger from Upper Peninsula, Michigan. His incredible life of faith and his dedication to bringing the Eucharist and spreading the gospel across miles and miles on snowshoes was absolutely amazing. And so I've been so honored to be able to learn more about his life. And in the book, They Might Be Saints on the Path to Sainthood in America, there's a chapter on Bishop Berger in that book as well. And not too long ago, in 2021, we released a new film called Man on a Mission, or called Walking with Berger, the Joe Gregor story. And in that story, we talk about sort of the background of this, that sainthood cause and how it got off the ground. So he's been a personal intercessor for me. I pray to him all the time. And I think he's one of the most interesting of the might-be saints in that collection of 24. And we're so excited today to be joined again by Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berger Association, to talk to us about the saintly bishop. Welcome back to the show today, Len.
Good morning, Michael.
It's always good to connect. And I think that, Bishop Berger, he's been such a great personal intercessor for me and an inspiration. I think, we always think about, are we doing enough to spread the gospel? And then I always pray to Bishop Berger and think about Bishop Berger, because compared to how he lived his life, he really went all out to spread the gospel. And so I think he's a great inspiration for so many people, but people are still getting to know who he is. And his death anniversary is just around the corner here, so it's a perfect time to talk about him. And he is a venerable, so he's in that second step in that path to sainthood. So let's just dial it back a little bit. Who was the man, Bishop Frederick Berger?
So, Bishop Berger is from Slovenia. He was born in 1797, came to America in 1830 after being a priest over in Slovenia for about 7 years. He had gotten word that Bishop Fenwick was looking for priests to come and to minister to the Native Americans that were in the Great Lakes region. And it just spoke to Frederick, to Father Berger at that point, and he petitioned to come over and was accepted. And I think, their educational system is much different than ours. in order to move on to the next level of education when he was a young man, he had to become fluent in 6 languages. And so he was a gifted linguist by the time he was 16. And one of the greatest gifts he brought with him was that passion for language and being able to talk to people in their native tongue. So when he got here in 1830, the first thing he did was he hired a native guide to teach him the Ojibwe language so that he could speak to the people in their native tongue. He just didn't feel that you could minister them unless you could speak their language. And so that began almost 38-year ministry to the Native Americans throughout the Great Lakes and settling in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where he lived amongst them, ministered to them, and worked to make sure that they had a good life that they could provide for their families.
And what do you think motivated Bishop Berrigo? Why did he go to these great extremes of putting on those snowshoes and traveling thousands of miles over the course of his life? What was his motivation?
You know, I think his inspiration, and it probably came from his mother. She taught him at such a young age that no matter what you do on earth, it's all for the glory of God, and that everything that you do should be pointed toward him. And so his faith was so deep at a very young age, and that's what he wanted. When we talk about making sure people have what they need, the top of the list for Father Berrigo was to make sure that they had their faith and that they knew that no matter what hardship they were going through or whatever they were journeying through, they weren't doing that alone. And so I think that was his motivation, was he just couldn't fathom the thought of having people that were hungry for the faith and to learn about the Lord and nobody to teach them. And in that day, when he was in Slovenia, there was a plethora of priests. And so he really wanted to go where he was needed. And so that was this vast, really unexplored and undeveloped area of the Upper Peninsula.
Absolutely. I think it's such a great inspiration, the effort that he put in and the incredible life that he lived and the fact that there were so many people from Slovenia who followed in his footsteps and came to the United States just shows his remarkable impact. And when we talk about Bishop Berrigo, we talk about somebody who's on that second step to sainthood. We've got Servant of God being the first, and then Venerable, then Blessed, then Saint, when two miracles are found. So what was it like when Bishop Berrigo was declared Venerable, all the work that had gone in to make his life known and actually recognized by Rome? What was that experience like for the Bishop Berrigo Association?
Well, of course, so exciting that that Rome is recognizing what we know to be so true in our hearts, is that he was such a saintly man and led such a heroic life. But the work that went into it from the Bishop Berrigo Association started back in 1930 when it was founded. And Joseph Grigrich, who was one of the founding fathers of the Bishop Berrigo Association, really has kind of a similar parallel life to Bishop Berrigo. Very devoted to his faith, became very devoted to Bishop Berrigo, blessed with the ability of language. And if you watch the new documentary that we did, Walking with Berrigo, the Joe Grigrich story, you'll certainly see he had a lot of other things on his side, which I think were just constant God winks of this story of Bishop Berrigo needed to be told. Joe went to a lot of work to get documents that we needed to put the positio or the position paper together that was eventually submitted to Rome in 1998 and accepted, which started this path of him being on this journey towards sainthood. So, we're indebted to Joe for his endless work, and there's so much of what we have built that is built on that foundation. And we continue to watch that grow, although maybe not as quickly. I tend to be a little impatient, so of course I'd like it to happen now. Maybe this is just God's way of teaching me some extra patience, but in God's time and using Bishop Berrigo and Joe's work to help people deepen in their faith as we patiently wait for him to be fully recognized in the church as a saint.
That's right. Yeah, that documentary that we did about Joe Gregorich was a fun one to put together. People can check that one out at ewtnrc.com. They can actually purchase the DVD, or they can go to the ondemand.ewtn.com and watch it. The background story of how his cause came to be was absolutely remarkable, and the work of one man, Joseph Gregorich, to push that forward. So I encourage people to check that one out. And so when we look at Bishop Berger on the path to sainthood, he's venerable, so in that second spot, he needs a miracle to advance to the next step. What's the latest information you can share with us about a potential miracle being considered by Rome?
So we do have a very solid case that we have done all the necessary background work, meaning everybody involved has been interviewed, all of that has been translated, transcribed, first of all, and then, of course, it has to be translated into Italian. And then all of the medical records have to be obtained and translated as well. That's all been completed, and so it's put in what they call a summarium, or a summary of the case. And that summarium is waiting now to go to two medical experts who will review it. And they need to see that it is meeting the three criteria, where it happened immediate, it was lasting, and there was a complete absence of medical intervention. In this case, we checked those boxes very well. There's a couple of different medical situations in this case that were resolved with absolutely no medical intervention, not even an aspirin. Mm-hmm. And it's been lasting. It was almost 8 years ago now. So we're very hopeful that once it gets into the medical experts, they will deem it favorable and send it to the full medical commission. COVID has not helped because it backlogged everything. But the commission has since reconvened. They met again beginning September 9th. And so we're hopeful that, you know, we'll give them a little time to catch up, that Bishop Berger's case will be one that is reviewed soon.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct about Rome being bogged down due to COVID, because I think the very first canonizations in 2 years or so are happening on May 15th of this year after a huge delay. So the Congregation for the Cause of Saints has really been shut down or slowed down. So hopefully they'll be able to get back to work as usual and consider advancing this cause. And so it's an exciting time to be a part of the Bishop Berger Association, and you're the executive director, Lenore McKean, we're talking to today. What can we look forward to from the Bishop Berger Association in the near future?
Well, we continue to expand our reach. Of course, we maybe are a little biased, but we feel like everybody needs to know about this saintly man. You know, he could have led a very easy life. He was born into nobility, and instead he gave that all up to come to an area that, he didn't speak the language. He didn't know the lay of the land, so to speak, completely foreign, and made such a huge impact. As you indicated, he had 17 seminarians that followed him over, and three of them went on to be bishops. And so the legacy that he created, all for the glory of God, to teach others the faith and help them deepen in their faith. So that's our job, is to carry that mission and his ministry on. So we continue to teach people and to bring people to Bishop Berger, hopefully then taking them to the faith. But we just want people to know about the Berger Association. We want them to know that we've taken the house that he lived and died in and created the Berger Educational Center and Museum, which is in Marquette, Michigan. And so it's open to the public. They can come for tours. And we have a beautiful prayer garden that, you know, you can just set a little time in and set and be inspired by this saintly man and think about all of his travels, that nothing would stop him to do the right thing and to get to the people that needed him. And I can only think that if we put just a little zeal and passion that he had for his faith and for the Lord in our lives, how different this world would look today.
Very well put. We've been talking today with Lenore McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berger Association. And what's the best place that people can go to find out more about Bishop Berger or the work that you do there?
They can go to our website at bishopberger.org. There's a history on there. There's information about the educational center. We have a gift shop store that they can shop online to obtain merchandise, books, and that. And we also have prayer cards and novenas that we distribute. So that's the best source of starting.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Lenore McKean, the Executive Director of the Bishop Berger Association, for joining us today to talk about this incredible future saint, Bishop Frederick Berger. Thanks so much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
God bless. That was Lenore McKean from the Bishop Berger Association. Check out that website, bishopberger.org, to find out more about this incredible saintly bishop. As I mentioned, of all the might-be saints that we've done programs on, he is one of my absolute favorites. So be sure to check him out in the new documentary called Walking with Berger. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this show or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guests today, Father Michael Delaney, the rector of St. Joseph's Oratory in Canada, and Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berger Association. And of course, now available is my book, They Might Be Saints, On the Path to Sainthood in America, 24 Blesseds and Venerables. You can check that one out from ewtnrc.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.